Welcome to the latest edition of Auto Insider, where we're talking cars, car dealerships, and mostly crap about both. I don't know about you, but I think we're about ready to get started.
All right, Dad, how you doing this morning?
Well, I'm great. I understand we have a guest today.
We do have a guest.
Yeah, I guess I've worn my welcome out.
I think it just means we're leveling up, Dad.
Okay,
I think,
cool.
I think we're leveling up. So, yes, we have Nicholas Hinrichsen, correct?
Correct. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Nick. So, thank you for joining us. Really appreciate your time.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so Nicholas is actually an entrepreneur and someone who's worked in the automotive space, Dad, for how long would you say now, Nicholas? 10 years?
7.5 years.
Seven and a half. I'm rounding it up to 10. He's been in the automotive space for rounding up to 10 years.
You're a car guy.
Actually, I'm not so much. Maybe I'm transforming into one. My co-founder is a huge partner.
Your co-founder is a huge. Okay, gotcha. But you've been in the space, so you know your way around.
Yeah.
So between the three of us, we've got 43 years, 7.5 years, and about 6 months. So on average, you're getting, you know, 20-ish years of experience right here. And so what we wanted to do today, Nicholas, with having you on the Auto Insider podcast was obviously, you know, learn a little bit about what you've done in the past in the automotive space, what you're doing in the future in the automotive space. And really, I think there's going to be some interesting opportunities here for my dad, you know, who's had only exclusive experience in the franchise dealership setting. And you, someone who's worked on kind of the automotive tech side, I'm interested to see, you know, the differences and similarities in how you both have approached the business over the years.
Okay, I look forward to it too.
So why don't you start out? Give us a little bit of background. I think your first company was called Carlypso, correct?
Correct. So maybe if we take one more step backwards, I'm from Germany originally. You can hear I'm not from the US. I moved to the US in 2011 to go to business school. And at Stanford Business School, that's where I met Chris, a huge car nut. His first car was a DeLorean, in fact. So he was traveling the time when he was 14 already.
Wow.
And then towards the end of business school, he and I started this company called Carlypso, which was a digital platform to sell your used car peer-to-peer. So I would help you, Zach, sell your car to Ray, for example. And that started because all our classmates asked Chris for advice, he being the resident car enthusiast. And then we somehow found ourselves selling our classmates' car.
Wow. Very cool.
That sounds a lot different than your intro to the car business, then.
Yeah, I was getting married and I needed to get a job.
Yeah, we were confused how we found ourselves in the car space, to be honest.
That seems to be the theme when it comes to getting in the car space. Okay, so you had Carlypso, and it did really well, right? Because it led to Carvana purchasing it, right?
It went through multiple phases. So we started out wanting to create this peer-to-peer experience where basically replacing Craigslist.
Yeah.
And so we raised, what was it, $1.2 million from professors and lecturers to build something digital. We went through Y Combinator, that's a startup accelerator in the Bay Area. We though noticed that if you deal with two individuals, you have this problem that the seller always wants more for the car than it's worth, and the buyer will always haggle forever to get another $50 off, and then you find yourself disappointing your two customers all the time. And so we pivoted away from the peer-to-peer model and instead made wholesale auction inventory, leasing inventory, or rental inventory accessible to consumers, basically fully online, if that makes sense.
Very cool. And what you described for peer-to-peer was, exactly what I encountered in the car business, I don't know, on a daily basis.
Yeah. What we found is really difficult, and we tried to become good at is explaining to consumers what a car is, what's in the car, what trim does it have, what packages, options, and features. Because we found consumers, if they wanted it or not, or if they used it as a way to negotiate, hard to say, but usually they were not comparing apples to apples. So when they saw a car, one of our cars listed, they called and said, hey, I saw the same car listed for $2,000 less somewhere else. And then often we ask the customer, show us the car so we can better understand. And then they compared different trim levels or compared like clean Carfax with an accident history. And so we wanted to figure out a very scalable way using technology to describe vehicles very well. So we wanted to take the VIN and then always know what packages, options, standard equipment it had, what trim it was, what history it had. And so when we were building our company, we spent a lot of time and engineering effort into becoming really, really good at describing vehicles.
Well, yeah, because most people, they just see it's the same model. And that's good enough for them, at least when it comes to time to negotiate the price of a car.
Exactly.
And most sellers who have an inflated idea as to what their car is worth, it's because they've usually attached some type of sentimental value to the car, and they figure since they're the ones that owned it, it should be worth more.
Yeah, we had a lot of advisors, and one person once told us, if you buy a car from a private person, it's as if you buy his dog.
Yes.
Like, you can't make an offer of $150 for your Labrador. Like, obviously, that person values his dog more than the market price for Labradors. And so we had the same experience, Ray.
Yep. I've never not seen it in the 43 years that I was on the retail side.
Yeah.
And I used to have to explain that to customers, that when they were trying to trade their car, I used to look at them and go, it's not going to do me any good when I explain to the next person that wants to buy it, well, you know, this was John Smith's car. People are going to go, who cares? Who cares about John Smith? It was just a car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had that same conversation, Ray.
It's funny the way that people's minds work.
So you were able, Nicholas, to build out this technology. You were able to, you know, provide for consumers apples to apples comparisons and help them understand, you know, from a wholesale inventory side, you know, what was available to them. What ended up happening to Carlypso? Because if you're listening to this and you're thinking, oh, I want to go check out Carlypso, I don't think you're going to be able to find it online, right?
You won't find it online anymore. No, we built this online retailer. After we pivoted away from the peer-to-peer into this online version, we raised another, I think, $8 million in venture capital, scaled the business to around 150 sales a month, and then noticed that we were on a path to building a lot of physical infrastructure. And so our initial idea and the pitch was that this is going to be a tech business, mm-hmm. where it's very asset light, where you have a lot of technology and very little physical infrastructure. But we noticed in order to scale and sell a lot of cars, you also need reconditioning centers and you need trucks. And we just didn't feel like we were well equipped to build this business. It requires A, a lot more capital, but B, also a lot of infrastructure and time, and that's inconsistent with the venture capital model. And so at that point in time, instead of raising more money, we started talking to friends we had in the car space, mm-hmm. some local ones in the Bay Area, but also a former classmate who worked at Carvana. And so that's how we met the executives and founders of Carvana, compared notes, and quickly realized that we, A, get along very well as people, and B, we had built something that Carvana was about to build. And instead of Carvana building it, we all agreed it makes much more sense if we sell our company to Carvana and then join the team.
Wow, very cool.
Yeah, that's really, as an entrepreneur myself and my dad, you know, interspersed in his career as a, you know, working in the car business, had a golf shop for a bit of time. And, you know, so an entrepreneurial family, it's always interesting to hear these kind of, you know, success stories where you're able to exit out. And so that's really interesting. And even more interesting, though, is, you know, this idea for Carlypso that you had, it seems like once you were acquired by Carvana, it really was able to, once you got some of the, whether it was the capital or the minds involved to get the physical infrastructure, it really took off, right? I mean, the Sell to Carvana initiative, which is, I think, where you focused your time on, I mean, it's huge now. It's a major driver for Carvana's business, if not the biggest driver for how they collect, you know, used inventory, especially high margin used inventory. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so what ended up happening is Chris and I joined Carvana, which was really exciting. And one of the reasons we did it was because we felt Carvana was on the right path and we weren't quite. And we wanted to see it through. Like, we wanted to see how we started out in 2013, and not only us, a bunch of companies in the digital retail space. And we wanted to see through how is this going to evolve and change the way used cars being sold. And it seemed like Carvana was on track to do that. So we were lucky to be able to come on board, in fact. My co-founder Chris ended up integrating what we had built was then, as a result, responsible for the homepage, for the pre-purchase experience, the search page, the vehicle detail pages. A lot of the data that you see there is powered by the technology that we sold and integrated into Carvana. And I started out being responsible for making trade-ins a better experience. And while doing so, I talked to so many customers on the website and noticed there's a lot of demand from people who just want to sell their car. And then once I was done with like the initial quick fixes and low-hanging fruit for trade-ins, we had a conversation with the executives and said, let's give the sell to Carvana business a try. There might be some demand for people, of people selling their cars to Carvana too, although there was no marketing spend at the time. And so, yeah, we went from a very, very, very little number of cars purchased per month to, I think, yeah, Ernie just said it in the earnings call in July. In July, Carvana ended up buying more cars from consumers than they sold to consumers.
And so let's hit on this for a moment, because I want to, you know, get some input from you, Dad, and then, of course, Nicholas as well. We're in an environment right now post or amidst COVID where used car supply is, it just can't keep up. And we've seen used car prices go sky high. And Dad, you've talked about in many YouTube videos, podcast episodes, the best way for a dealership, and let's consider Carvana in this context a dealership, best way to get inventory is from trade-ins, from direct.
Yep,
and
absolutely.
We also see then, you know, a business like Carvana being innovative and being proactive in buying cars. And so I guess I wonder, I mean, are you surprised to see that a more innovative player was able to come in and now this is their primary way to collect used inventory?
Am I surprised to see it? I think it's a natural evolution. And truth be told, CarMax is the one that started bringing it as part of their business experience was, hey, if you have a car to sell, sell it to us. Because they realized early on, it's cheaper to get cars either as trade-ins or buying them directly from a customer than it is buying them at an auction where you have to pay a buy fee, you have to transport the vehicle back to where you need to recondition it. I mean, there's just extra expenses if you buy an auction car, but you cut out a lot of those expenses when you're buying direct from the customers. And so, to me, it makes a lot of sense. And I can't tell you, I mean, there were any number of times at the dealership that I worked at where if somebody had a car they wanted to sell, we were more than happy to buy it from because I was usually buying it at market with less expenses involved.
Hey, Zach here, one half of Your Auto Insider. We really hope you're enjoying today's episode. If you're ever interested, you can always get more insight into what Ray and I are doing at yourautoadvocate.com. We've got a platform that we've built that'll help you navigate the car buying process, negotiate the best deal possible, and feel more confident while you're doing it. All right, let's get back to the episode. And Nicholas, was that the same type of conversation that you all were having, you know, a couple of years ago back at Carvana?
Yeah, well, fundamentally, here's what you want, right? You want market efficiency. In order to do the best thing for these two customers, ultimately, it's still two customers, a car seller and a car buyer. The best version of the market is where the seller sells directly to the buyer. Mm-hmm. Like, that's fundamentally still the best version. That doesn't work that easily for many reasons, including that buyers overestimate the cost of repairs, and it's a very emotional purchase, and it's a big purchase, so you want what's the old car for the seller is going to be the new car for the buyer. And so that's where the need for reconditioning comes. So there needs to be an intermediary, but you only need one, ideally. You only need one who's good at reconditioning and good at connecting buyers and seller or finding a marketplace for both. You don't need like a dealer where you drop off your trade or sell it to. You don't need to transport it to the physical auction. You don't need to pay the auction. You don't need to transport it back to your lot. See, there's lots of middlemen. And the best version in theory is peer-to-peer. The second best is a national car seller with centralized inventory, because that means you get the car, you recondition it, and you can sell to anyone everywhere across the country. And so that's why Carvana makes so much sense, both for buyers and sellers, because the seller will still get a lot of money for the car. It's not like Carvana makes a lot of money because it lowballs sellers, that's not the case.
The opposite of lowballing it from my personal experience. Yeah. I mean, I'll just share with you, Nicholas, and my dad knows this because he's been watching me do it. The offer from CarMax on my car was $17,500, something like that. And the offer from Carvana that I just got yesterday was a little over $20,000. And so, I'm going to take that offer. I'm going to be using this program that you spent years working on and building. And it speaks, though, to, the need for this kind of like centralized player. Like, they can still manage to make money, or at least, fuel their growth by paying a nice premium. I mean, I'd be hard pressed to probably sell that anywhere else for that type of price. But it's because of the distribution that they have that they're going to find someone who's going to buy it for more.
Exactly. There's like we initially like pricing develops on a continuous basis. Literally every day there's adjustment, and it gets better and better and better. And so initially we read a lot of comments everywhere around, "Oh, Carvana is overpaying. It's so silly." And we then obviously made a big effort to track individual vehicles and figure out, okay, when they go through the system, are we making money? Are we losing money? Clearly, Carvana is making money. This is working. It's not to fuel growth, I can tell you that for sure.
Interesting.
Your example is an interesting example, and I can see two reasons. And I can't speak too much about Carvana because it's a public company.
Yeah, yeah.
But I could see two reasons why your vehicle may do really well. A, Carvana has a national audience. So you may not have a local buyer who's willing and able to pay a lot of money for that same car, but maybe on the Bay Area. Maybe on the East Coast. Like, Carvana is smart enough to know this because Carvana knows its demand very well.
Yeah.
Number two is, I can't tell for sure, but this is theoretically a concept in my head. If you retail cars and you're specialized in and all your customers have really good credit, like perfect, exceptional credit, then there's not a lot of money on the back end for your financing. If you can also sell to customers with challenge credit, so basically provide a really, really good experience to people who need loans, then the car sellers, the retailers usually have also a healthy amount of back-end margin. And so if your car happens to be a car that fits the audience of somebody who has slightly challenged credit, or where the financing margin is higher, or where historically people bought service contracts and gap insurance, well, then the margin of the car might not have to be that high because the money is being made somewhere else and the customer is still incredibly happy. So these are the reasons why I, in theory, can think of.
Yeah.
Why your offer is your experience is the experience of, I don't even know which car you drive, so I can't tell for sure, and also wouldn't. But there's many reasons why that can be the case.
Yeah. Makes perfect sense. What's really funny is Zach and I discussed that earlier today for an upcoming YouTube video.
Yeah, I mean, the back end margin that a lot of the big public, either the dealership groups or the digital retailers, I mean, that's the area of seemingly utmost importance to grow the margin there, because, if you can make $2,000 on the back end or $2,100 like AutoNation does, on every vehicle that's sold, every new vehicle that's sold, okay, if the front end margins even break even, who cares? You're making $2,000 in back end, products and services. And so I see Carvana doing the same thing. We see Shift doing the same thing, Vroom doing the same thing. And ultimately, I think it's beneficial for the consumer, because to your point, Nicholas,
absolutely,
peer-to-peer would be ideal. But I mean, I'll speak even personally. Like, I wouldn't necessarily even know where to begin selling my car peer-to-peer. And if someone were to come and God forbid, there were deficiencies in my vehicle and I wasn't aware of them, and they drive it for a week and now they've got a clunker, I would feel terrible. And so you have these one layer intermediaries rather than the, okay, we're going to send it off to the Mannheim. Well, we're going to send it to a dealer. The dealer's going to send it to Mannheim. Mannheim's going to send it to a reconditioning. Reconditioning is going to bring it back. I mean, it's like, you see the opportunity for efficiency, and as consumers, we should all, be a little happy that it's going to become a bit of a more seamless process for us.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. So what car do you drive? You said everybody knows it, and I'm the ignorant in the room who doesn't know what car it is.
So I have a 2017 Volvo S90.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I love that thing dearly, but, I was about, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 months ago when coronavirus really was starting to come along, maybe $6,000 underwater in it.
Wow.
And now I'm only $2,500 underwater in it, and that seems like a great deal.
Where did you buy it? At the dealership, I assume?
Yes. Yeah, my dad helped me, obviously, a little more than 2 years ago get that car. Beautiful car.
And you bought it used? Look, it sounds like
certified,
it was a year
old. Pre-owned, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, awesome. Yeah. And then, if you don't mind me asking, who did you finance it with?
Volvo Financial.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. And I'm surprised you're so much underwater. It may have been because it's...
Oh, I put a lot of miles on it, Nicholas.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. That's I'm not surprised why he's underwater.
My dad's watched me, date girls that live
drive in circles.
You end up driving too much. It's not a good recipe for positive equity in a vehicle.
That's true. Okay. Understood.
Yeah. So, Nicholas, why don't you share with us a little bit about what you're doing now? Because I think, if I'm not mistaken, you just left Carvana, what was it? Like
last in
month,
June.
2 months ago? Yeah.
In June, yeah. So Chris and I obviously were incredibly lucky to come to Carvana, join the leadership there, help out, hopefully have had a bit of impact. But we always had this dream and itch to start another company because it's fun and there's so much to do out there. And then when Corona started and obviously it was chaotic in every company, including Carvana, we had to make some adjustments and it worked out really well. But when we felt like we had done our part there, we were asking ourselves, what is an area that we're specifically interested in? And you may have noticed, because I asked all these questions about your auto loan, one thing Chris and I care about a lot is figuring out how to help people with challenge credit lower their car payments and or get out of bad credit. It's just incredibly unfair if you're stuck in a high interest car loan. Because you end up being, as you said, negative equity. You make payments for a car that's not worth as much. Nobody rewards you for making payments. So if you make 12, 18, 24 months payments in a row, you're still stuck in the initial interest rate. Yesterday, I talked to a customer, 50 months loan, and that person spent 43 months paying 21% interest on the auto loan. And the car was worth $11,000 when he bought it, and he had already paid $15,000 in interest and principal. So what I'm trying to get to is people who make their payments on car loans should get rewarded. Yet refinancing is not a big thing in the car space quite yet.
Yeah.
And so we wanted to look into whether or not we can build a digital platform to refinance auto loans and or help consumers manage their monthly car payments.
That is such a wonderful concept to want to be part of. Having spent all the time I did in the retail business and the people that had the challenge credit and the bad credit, and as I used to always like to say, those who can afford to pay the least end up paying the most. And those poor folks usually end up paying the most their entire lifetime. And it really is unfair and unfortunate.
Yeah. When I moved to the US, this is a personal story. I think you'll laugh, but it gets the point across. In Germany, people just don't have credit. I mean, I've never been in debt. It's just not a thing in Germany.
Sure.
Moved to the US, went to business school, and then we started the business. And then Chris found that Fiat was running a huge promotion in California for these little 500s,
yeah,
the electric version of it.
Okay.
So Fiat was leasing them for 36 months for $89 a month.
Oh,
that's,
my goodness.
That's less than I pay for my smartphone.
Your smartphone is probably more reliable.
No, you said that. I had a very good experience with the car.
He leased it, Dad. That thing was under warranty.
It doesn't matter if it doesn't run.
Nothing can go wrong with it. So Chris is like, dude, we need to get one, each of us. A, they're fun, and B, it's more expensive not to have them.
Yeah.
So we go to the dealership. Chris is done in 5 minutes. $89 a month for 36 months. I sit down. Financing manager takes like 45 minutes. Comes back. Happy face. Like, congratulations. You're approved. Your monthly payment is $1,200, though. And I'm like, what? It's like, yeah, you know, you don't have bad credit. You just don't have any credit. So you have a thin file. We need to build credit first. But I'm really excited. Found somebody to finance you.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to do that. Like, I'd rather. Is that even an option? There's 36 payments of $89. Can I just pay you $3,600 now? It's like, yeah, no, you can't. I'm like, yeah, clearly I'm not going to take this car. And then Chris, my co-founder, ended up co-signing the lease. So I would get it for $89. And then fast forward, literally 6 months in, I, for fun, just ran my own financing application and our own website. And all of a sudden, I qualified for 1.99% for up to $100,000.
Wow.
And so the story here is if you have thin files or bad credit, and you start being really disciplined and somebody helps you, you actually repair your credit, build your credit relatively quickly. Yet nobody proactively tells the kid, now is a good time to revise all your payments you're making on your car, because it's not in the interest of the lender sometimes. And so we feel like there's a role to be played and help Americans save money.
That's very, very cool. I really admire you for that.
Yeah, well, we got lucky, so I think it's time to give back.
I feel the same way.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's a lot of parallels, Nicholas, between, you know, your ethos and your sentiment, and obviously, Dad, you know, your willingness to work with me on your auto advocate. The whole automotive experience for the customer, although it's improved, you know, there's a lot of room for improvement still yet to be, you know, uncovered and had.
Yeah.
And for many, it's the second largest purchase they'll ever make in their lives. And so, you know, if you are in a position where you are able to help make that more confidence inspiring, more financially, you know, stable, you should feel a somewhat of responsibility to try and work there. And all three of us obviously are trying to do that in different ways. And it's hopefully, you know, knock on wood, going to make a difference.
Yeah, I agree. I think we're very aligned there.
Definitely.
Yep.
Definitely.
Yep. Really are.
So I guess any parting shots or thoughts, Dad, on your end?
No, I think what you're about to embark on in selling your car to Carvana is one of the best decisions you've ever made, especially financially. And I think what Nicholas is doing and how he's trying to help make a difference in people's lives is very admirable and something that we need more of in this country. So I applaud you both.
Thanks, Dad.
Well, you're welcome, son.
I feel like your son. Did you just, was that an offer to adopt me?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Are you adoptable?
Oh, goodness.
Anytime.
I like that. Okay.
Hey, well, Nicholas, we really appreciate you being on Auto Insider. Obviously, best of luck with everything you're doing. So the new company you and Chris co-founded is called With Clutch. It's withclutch.com, correct?
Correct. The company is called Clutch.
Clutch,
the domain is withclutch.com, and then the goal is to provide you a firm refinance offer with just a few clicks.
So down in the show notes, there'll be a link to Nicholas's website. As always, you know, if we can help you at your auto advocate, all the information as you're going through the buying process, you know where to go for that. And Nicholas, we'll look out for an update maybe in like 6 months or so, and I'll definitely be closing the loop in the next episode about my Carvana, my sell to Carvana experience. So stay tuned for that.
Awesome. Good luck with that.